Ciao, benvenuti. Welcome to Choc Tops and Cassata, the podcast that takes a peek into the way migrants got their fix of Italian movies from World War II to the advent of SBS in the early 80s.
This is a Secret Life of Language podcast from the School of Languages and Linguistics at the University of Melbourne. I'm Elisabetta Ferrari, lecturer in Italian Studies at the University of Melbourne.
I'm Mark Nichols. I research and teach in film in the School of Culture and Communications at the University of Melbourne.
And I'm Santo Cilauro. I'm not a lecturer in anything. I'm a writer, I'm a filmmaker, and an unashamed connoisseur of all Italian B-grade movies, regardless of where they were made. Sicily, Calabria, or way up north in Naples. Our special guest today is Carlo Zeccola, whose family own and ran the largest of all Italian movie houses in Australia, the legendary Metropolitan in Sydney Road, Brunswick. Carlo, how are you this week?
I'm wonderful, Santo.
Feeling good?
Yeah, really good. Wonderful to be
Can
here.
Can I ask you a question? Are you a Choc Top or a Cassata?
I'm certainly a Choc Top. I'm a bit more of the newer generation type cinema goer, so I would say
Cassata. Was there any bit of the Cassata you didn't like?
You know that that red bit that looked like fish roe?
That was my favourite bit.
What was it?
I think it was a cherry that went off. That just went off.
Okay, it reminds me of red caviar for some reason. So
red caviar. Yeah. Carlo, can you tell us what kind of Italian movies were shown back in the day?
When we think of Italian cinema, we think of sort of Fellini, Vittorio De Sica, all the great quality stuff. But there was also, how do you say, there was also so much trash.
I was about to say B-grade, but I think that's actually complimenting a little bit too much.
Yeah, B and C-grade. You know, there's spaghetti westerns, which are very much loved now. There's Franco Cicci, who are a great comedic duo.
Franco and Cicci Ingrassia. But to all of us, it was Franco Cicci.
Yeah, that's
Franco
right,
Cicci.
Yes. They were much loved. There was even, you know, wacky stuff like kung fu pirate movies that they would show. Really obscure,
just
strange.
Mix up the genres.
Yeah, very strange.
Don't forget also a lot of melodramas. What the Italian, they would say, strappa lacrime. You know, you would go to the cinema and cry your eyes out.
Tearjerkers.
I
never heard that word.
Strappa lacrime.
Nice.
Absolutely.
Nice.
There'd always also be the religious films as well that would always be showed at Easter time, the Ten Commandments and Jesus of Nazareth.
I'll never forget. We used to get in trouble because our uncles used to take us to the wrestling, and all the women in the family would say that it's just way too violent. The uncles decided to take us to the movies, and all the women said, oh, that's wonderful. But it was just gladiator movies. So it was just more of the same kind of violence with horses and chariot races.
We actually have another guest in the studio today, John, or Giovanni Zeccola.
Who also happens to be my brother.
That's right. And he was actually employed at the Metropolitan Cinema.
Exploiting child labour laws. I think he was about 11 years old at the time. Yes, he did work there behind the candy bar and saw it all.
And maybe he can explain to some of our listeners who don't know what a cassata is, exactly what a cassata was.
Giovanni, what sort of audiences attended the Metropolitan?
Look, it was quite diverse. It really gave me a really good cross-section and observation of Italians in Australia back in the mid-70s. I was a 12-year-old back then, and I just got back from Italy living there for 2 years. And so I was able to sort of see all these wonderful people come into the cinemas. And it was a bit of a mixed audience.
What was the capacity there at the Metropolitan?
It was about 1,800 people.
Would you often get it full? Because that's a big capacity.
Yeah, it was busy for the big films. So whenever, you know, one of the big films came out, like the Ten Commandments or Jesus di Nazareth, which is a Jesus of Nazareth, any of the Albano movies that came out, they were pretty good. Or even, like, I remember Rocky, watching the movie Rocky almost to a full house.
In Italian? Was it dubbed in Italian?
It was in Italian, yeah.
And was there mumbling as well in Sylvester Stallone Italian mumbling?
Yes, there was. but it was funny watching that even because as an usher, you used to sort of have to sit inside because you had to obviously make sure people weren't getting up to mischief or anything. But, you know, hearing the nonne sort of cheer on Rocky, Italiano, give him another one, give him another one. These are sort of old comare, old nonne that got really involved in the movie.
Rocky on a Saturday night, the wrestling on a Sunday. It was a violent weekend for the nonne.
It certainly was. The Saturday night would be your traditional going out, like as if they would all come all dressed up as if they were going to a wedding, you know, all with their nice suits and, the, you know, the donne would all have the nice clothes and the they'd get their hair done and all that sort of stuff. And then, you know, you'd also have your date nights as well. So you'd have, you know, the couple that would come along and in the background would be the uncles and aunts all escorting them. And then in the Sunday, we'd have shows on Sunday afternoon, and that was more of a family sort of time. So that's when you'd probably have a bit more of the kids coming down and watching the shows, as well as the nonne maybe who, you know, on a Saturday night would go to bed early and didn't really want to stay out too late. So, you know, it was a really good sort of cross-section. It was fun because it was a big family event. Like I always say, it looked as if it was a wedding, as if they were going to a wedding. They'd all be dressed up. It was a great social occasion because probably got to look back in the 70s, Italians really were limited in terms of the exposure they had with the Italian language because you really only had the balli, the dinner dances, and that was about it. There wasn't TV, there wasn't internet, there wasn't SBS, yeah. Right? So that was their only time, and they couldn't watch a movie that they could finally understand, I suppose.
Did the film sort of determine the type of atmosphere that was, you know, in the foyer or in the cinema at the
time?
Yeah,
it was funny. It's a good question because, you know, when you did the Franco e Ciccio in Grazia, or as they used to call them, Franco e Ciccio movies, it was a little bit more happy. A lot of the kids used to actually come then. I used to remember them. The kids were so rapt because they just thought they were hilarious.
That humour.
Yeah, the Laurel and Hardy type sort of humour.
But there was always a bit of a sexy scene. There was always slightly sexy scenes in
Frankie. I don't remember those. I had to be taken out of the room when they came.
Santo, it's not an Italian film without a sexy film. Right?
So that's true.
And then there was the melodramatic one, the rom coms. Like for example, the Albano Romina power movies, where it was the boy meets girl, the girl has a fight, or there's a misunderstanding, and it's all tragedy, and they all kiss and make up at the end. And then you see everybody walking out of the cinemas all happy, a few with the tears in their eyes. And then there was the dramatic ones, like, you know, Figli di Nessuno. I remember that movie. It was a classic black and white, and all the women just coming out crying, all that sort of stuff.
And what was the operation like? Was it a family operation?
I basically did everything except the projectionist because I don't think I was high enough to sort of put the spools up on the camera. But it was ushers, ticket box, used to clean up, used to do the candy bar. I actually, as an enterprising young 12-year-old, negotiated one chocolate tub of ice cream per session. And then on Sundays, because it was double time, that's when I had the cassata. I sold so many cassate, I sold so many chocolate tubs, chips. They didn't have Coke and all that stuff. It was orange cordial. Pure orange cordial, which really, I think, Carlo, you might have a story behind that one.
There was the famous orange powdered drink. It was a sickly sweet orange drink that I remember sat quite high up on the candy bar. It came to the cinema in sort of plastic bags as a orange powder, and it would be then pre-mixed. And the person that was tasked with mixing the drink was our uncle, Zio Nino, or Nino Lucci, who at the time was actually one of the journalists for Il Globo. Yeah. He didn't work in the cinema, but we did get him in to specifically do this task. He came from Trieste, which is sort of a city on the border of Slovenia and Italy. And the reason why he was tasked with this was because he was the tallest member of our family and was the only one that could reach the lid of the drink dispenser, whereas the rest of us were fairly vertically challenged.
The cassata and the tartufi were obviously in the bottom. They're in the bottom fridge.
The lower drawers, yes.
Let's wait 1 minute. I think that we might have to explain to the listeners what a cassata is. It is in fact a traditional Sicilian cake which is made with ricotta, sponge cake, chocolate, candied fruit and candied cherries that, red bit that Carlo doesn't really like. Not the easiest choice though to serve in a cinema. So wouldn't popcorn have been easier?
We didn't offer popcorn because, again, that was, I don't think the Italians there knew what popcorn was. Yeah. But the cassata would sort of be served on a little plate, on a plastic plate and a little plastic spoon. And, of course, they'd be halfway through eating it. For whatever reason, they would just plonkered down, and there was no carpets in those. Only the aisles had carpets. The rest was all wooden floorboards. So these, gradually these kasata would melt down three or four rows down the middle, which really made it interesting to clean up.
Which is pretty bad because once it melts, it flows along the ridges.
Yes, it sort of encourages the flow, you know.
When did operations stop? Do you remember what the year was?
I think it was probably around the late 70s.
Okay.
And what happened is that the advent of VHS came in. So you had a lot of access to VHS movies, and a lot of Italian movies were coming out. And so, unfortunately, it was the sort of the death of the Italian cinema because it was quite niche. It was not like the big cinemas like the Hoyts and the Villages survived because they had mass population, whereas in Australia, in Melbourne especially, it was just the Italian population was probably getting smaller and smaller, not as many migrants were coming out. So they all went to the VHS, and unfortunately the attendances gradually started to go down, got to a point where it was like, let's go out on a high note rather than bankrupt. So, and that's what they did. They eventually closed down the cinemas.
I suspect that the Cinema Italia in Clifton Hill went for a little longer. I think they tried to press forward. I think they may have maybe renovated and then wanted to justify the fact that they had renovated and kept going. So it wouldn't have been much longer than that, though.
Cinema Italia was our enemy, our competition.
Oh, so I like to hear that. That's good. Yeah. Did you ever spy on each other?
We actually did.
You did?
I distinctly remember because we sort of had an agreement between the two because we would sort of have the film and then we'd pass it on to them after a couple of weeks, and then it would do like this roadshow amongst other Italian cinemas like the Cinema Italia. There was also the La Scala, which was in Footscray, and then it went to the Gala Cinema in Dandenong. So, and then it would go out to regional Victoria. So, but on this one occasion, he managed to get this film called Innamorarsi alla mia età, which was with Julio Iglesias. And he got the rights for this film, which sort of, I think, annoyed us to a little bit because we had this gentleman's agreement. And so he showed it, and it just played to packed houses. And so I remember a couple of times Dad and I would drive past after the cinemas and try and see what was going on and who was there and how many people they had and was it full or was it how it was.
How many cassette they were selling. Yes.
Yeah. So because we couldn't go there, they'd know us because they knew the family. So we would be caught out, you know. So unfortunately.
Sounds very clandestine.
It was.
Santo, you have got some memories from Cinema Italia. Lots.
That's where I grew up. But I think one of the strangest memories I have is not even going there to watch a movie, going there to watch a football game, a soccer game. Yes, because back then you couldn't watch World Cups on television. They didn't have them live. Certainly the 1970 World Cup wasn't live on television. So we had to wait 2 months after it was played. So it was in Mexico in June, the games were played. And I'll never forget, in about September, October, my dad took me and said, we are going to go see one of the great games of all time. And I thought we were going to Olympic Park to watch a game or something. He took me to the cinema. He said, we're going to watch the Italy versus West Germany game. It was a semi-final in the 1970 World Cup. One of the great games of all time. Italy sensationally won 4-3 in extra time. But we all knew the result because it was such a great game. But yet we went to the cinema 2 months later, and it was a packed cinema of people literally standing around outside smoking cigarettes, looking really nervous. The old guys were going, oh, I don't know, these Germans are pretty tough. You know, they're a tough side. And all the kids were thinking, do they know that, you know, the game had been played 2 months
ago? The result could have changed.
Who knows? These Germans are tricky. They're tricky. So we ended up going in the cinema, and it was like being at a game. There was people cheering and throwing things, and every time a goal was scored. It was a wonderful experience. And strangely enough, when the Cinema Italia closed down, was in the early 80s or mid 80s, the owner of the actual cinema, he wanted my father to do the conveyancing. My father is a solicitor. And he was overseas at the time. And because I was studying law, he just assumed that I could do the conveyancing for him, which I had no idea about. So I got a friend of mine to help me. And in the end, they couldn't afford to pay me. So they said, you can go down into the storeroom and grab any posters, any films, anything you want. You can just take anything at all. And I ended up taking all the posters, so I've got all the posters at home. But I couldn't decide on any films until I saw Italy versus West Germany in 1970. I saw that on three reels, so I keep that at home. That's one of the – I have great pride in keeping that as an object.
Have you watched it since, and has the result been the same?
I don't have a Super 8 projector, I'm afraid, Carlos, so I haven't been able to watch it, but I have seen it on YouTube. And believe it or not, it stayed the same. It stayed the same from how it happened in Mexico and then how it happened at the cinema as well.
Fantastic.
It's a great game. But look, the Cinema Italia is a wonderful, you know, it was a wonderful experience for us. And again, this might be apocryphal, but I believe my grandfather was the very last person to go to the cinema. He was, the day they closed down, they actually said to him, look, you're the only person, you're the only patron here. Do you mind if we close down from now on? You know, you can't come every week. So he was one of the last people there. But the beautiful thing about it is that I've spoken to people about it since, and it's almost like a myth. It exists in time and people's memories of it. You know, is it real? Is it not real? I've had this debate, was there a fountain in the foyer? And I'm convinced that there wasn't, and that a fountain was maybe, was it the Metropolitan, John?
Yes, that's correct.
There was. It might have been that the concentrated orange drink dispenser.
Yes, that's right. That's actually, what we did with the leftover.
That's what they might be confused with.
Definitely, there was a fountain in the middle. It had a little spinning wheel, and it had a light projector, and this wheel would have four different colours on it. Yep. It's the 1970s version of a very light. You know what that is? And it used to have a pot plant, used to spin and had this fountain, and it would forever, it's still in my head now, I can hear it, that fountain going on and on and on.
Elizabeth, a question for you. You arrived in Australia, in the 90s?
Yes, in the early 90s.
How do you view all this as a newer Australian?
Already in the 90s, I think that you were fairly far away from Italy, yes, we had the TV and SBS, but compared to today, I can see how important it was right at the beginning to be able to have Italian material or films. So the 50s, to me, really is something that would have been so important to people to be able to connect in some way with their own country.
So that's interesting because therefore... whatever the shared experience was here for us as migrants, it mirrors an experience that you had back in Italy watching films? Or do you think it feels like a different phenomenon?
No, I think it's very much also an experience in Italy, because we know that in Italy, although there are all of the great directors, you know, the Fellini, you know, De Sica, Rossellini, people really like to go to the movie also for entertainment, to see this kind of film, light-hearted. So I think that it does very much mirror what was happening in Italy at the time. The main difference is the fact that whereas in Italy you would have gone to the cinema and have all other films from other nationalities, maybe, you know, from France, a lot of American films, all dubbed in Italian, of course, but a variety of, different films. I think that the experience here in Melbourne is quite unique because mostly, these were just Italian films. So the audience, the Italian audience, really, they were only able to see Italian films. And I think it's also there is this idea of an event, of a community event, yes, or a special event that was fairly unique and for the Italian migrants here that would have been different in Italy. I mean, going to the cinema in Italy would have been an outing, but not as such a treasure probably and special event as it was here.
Elizabeth, I'd second that because I remember, like I said, I just got back from Italy for 2 years, and so we used to watch films in Italy, but it was part of the furniture, you could almost say, going there, because you used to, you know, it was all just regular sort of thing. Whereas here in Australia, if you were a migrant back then, you go to the supermarket and the person spoke English, you go on the radio and it was English, and you went to the TV and it was English, all that sort of stuff. And then finally on a Saturday night for 4 hours, you had this exclusive Italian session, that's what made it special. That's, again, it just amplified it. You were able to sort of immerse yourself in this Italy. And then once it finished, you went back home and then the TV would be English and the radio would be English, the supermarket, the milk bar, all those, they'd all be back in English. Whereas if you're in Italy, it'd all be Italian. So it was wall-to-wall Italy. And that's why I think it was very special, you know, that community feeling.
And at the same time also, it was bringing together people that were Italian from very different regions with very different dialects.
Okay, Elisabetta, I will ask you, your family comes from Parma. Would they ever have seen a Franco and Ciccio film?
Oh, yes, they would have.
Really?
Yes, mostly probably on TV.
On TV.
They're comedians, very, very well known.
For listeners out there, Franco and Ciccio are very southern, Sicilian basically.
The people that came there, when they went to the cinema, the escapism, they just wanted to have fun and forget a little bit, you know, and that's why the Franco Ciccio movies were popular. That's why the Albano movies were popular. At times when we used to play the more heavier movies, you know, the ones that needed a bit of thought, and they'd go a week and that was it. You know, even Fellini and movies like that, Bertolucci, just didn't go that well because people didn't want to walk in and watch a movie and by the opening credit have a headache thinking about already, well, what's this movie about sort of thing.
I think the other very interesting thing is that it really created that sense of community that people were longing for and that would have missed from home. I always find it really sweet, these stories of these families dressing up in their Sunday best, going to the movie, meeting up with other Italians. So to me, it's really also a longing for a sense of community or a sense of a group. That
the paese, reliving sort of
reliving the paese. That's right, exactly.
Then at the tail end of it all, when SBS comes in and it's, oh, great, SBS is here. It has Italian news on the radio. It has Italian movies. But did it satisfy that desire about wanting to experience something as a community altogether? Possibly not.
Yeah, but then it's not surprising that when, you know, for example, Pala started with the Italian Film Festival, that was so well received by Italians in Melbourne and all over Australia, because again, I think that it created a moment or a venue where everyone could meet up again as a community.
I think people need that social, whereas they didn't have that before. There was no real Italian in, you know, the media, for example, right? There was, you had the Globo and the Fiamma. There wasn't any radio, really. And the only sort of Italian exposure you got on television was in the 70s, early 70s, Variety Italian Style, which was a show that was went for 1 hour on a Sunday at lunchtime.
Right, on Channel O,
in competition with the wrestling.
The wrestling, yes.
So there was always a big fight in our family because I wanted to watch the wrestling and Mum and Dad wanted to watch Variety Italian Style. And that was a 1 hour program that was put together where you could hear, see, watch things Italian. But prior to that, they really didn't have, cinema was the only other place you could go. You know, now you've got the internet, you've got podcasts, you've got YouTube, everything, you know.
I can see that the closing credits are starting to come over the show. I can see the word fine scrolling down very shakily.
Yes, the nonne are leaving.
The nonne are leaving. They're crying.
Is this where we're crying? Eh?
The cassatas are melting down. Yeah, they're melting. So, Carlo, Giovanni Zeccola, thank you so much for joining us.
Absolute
it's been
pleasure.
Wonderful. And
thank you.
I think that brings us to the end of another Choc Tops and Cassata. Bye now.
You have been listening to Choc Tops and Cassata, an episode of The Secret Life of Language. Special thanks to our guests, Carlo and Giovanni Zeccola, and our producer and editor, Alice Garner. The Secret Life of Language is recorded and mixed at the Horwood Recording Studio by Gavin Nabel. It is a podcast from the School of Languages and Linguistics at the University of Melbourne. Choc Tops and Cassata would not be possible without the support of the Australasian Centre for Italian Studies. Be sure to keep up with every episode of The Secret Life of Language by following us on the Apple Podcast app, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast. The Secret Life of Language is licensed under Creative Commons.